I am Esmael Hillis. This is Hairdressing Masterminds podcast. And I present you today Jean Xu, China business advisor and consultant, and also host of China Leadership Dilemma podcast. Hi, Jean. Welcome.
Hi, Esmael. Glad to be here.
So, Jean, I've seen you're very busy with your work like a Chinese business advisor and consultant. So could you tell us a bit about yourself and of the beginning of your journey?
Okay, well, thank you for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure. Pleasure.
I'm an American. I was born and raised in the United States.
Okay.
But my ethnicity is Chinese. So I'm what they call an American-born Chinese, or for short, we call ourselves ABCs. One of the advantages that I have for the business that I'm in is I also speak fluent Mandarin Chinese. And as we all know, the world's two largest economies are the United States and China. So I've basically spent the last 20 years either working to, traveling to, and the last 6 or 7 years actually living in Shanghai, where I've been doing a lot of business. I've been an entrepreneur. I also teach at some universities in China. My wife is also from China, even though we met in the US. And my specialty is really helping Americans or Westerners understand how to navigate the complexities of doing business in China, but more generally, how to do business across cultures. And I do that by focusing on what I call the essential soft skills that matter. And those, in my opinion, would be awareness, which includes self-awareness, situational awareness, and cultural awareness, and empathy. And by helping my clients and my students develop these essential soft skills, it helps them to improve how other people perceive them, and in the long term, it influences the outcomes they are able to achieve. So for hairdressers who have to interact with new clients almost on a daily basis, developing these soft skills and understanding how to communicate with people of different races and different nationalities, I think can also be helpful.
Yes, because if we can jump over from that point, so I have already some friends of mine who are going sometimes to China. So what they do is they teach courses there to hairdressers, and so it's for us it's also like a new market we discover, and we have it's also think an interconnection that came from the fact that every year, we're in London, there's also a very big event. It's called Salon International. So, and we often see lots of Chinese people also from China and Taiwan also.
Yeah. So
those people, it's a long journey to come to London to see what's developing. So,
yes.
And now you see the tendency there that people who are already giving courses and teaching, and sometimes there are guys on a very high level, because this is not only salon work, Jean, this is really on a higher level, or guys who work on shows, they have higher skills, if you can say it. So you see the tendency that we discovered the market and the people there, and that we begin to develop that kind of trading of the, I don't know how you have to call it. So, and I can imagine that there would be a lot of cultural differences, what refers to, the difficulty to maybe do the right thing. And I don't know how you think about that.
Well, I think China obviously is a huge market, number one. Number two, the way that Chinese culture has evolved, because there's so much wealth being created in China. So several things are happening in China simultaneously. One is it's a huge wealth creation. So many people are being lifted out of poverty and they're moving into the middle class. And middle class is, is ambitious and they want to move into the upper class. And culturally, what has happened is that Chinese people, culturally, they care a lot about their face, or in Chinese, what we call mianzi. And that's kind of like their appearance or what other people think of them. And a lot of that translates into Chinese people being the world's largest consumer of luxury goods, right? So luxury items, especially those coming from Europe, luxury cars, Lamborghinis and Ferraris, also coming from Europe, diamond rings coming from like Tiffany's or Cartier. I mean, there's a huge market in China for those things. And from a hair, from the hairdressing point of view, Chinese, young Chinese professionals, generally speaking, they want to have the latest fashion trends. They want to have the latest hairstyles. And they believe, rightly or wrongly, that all comes from Europe, or it comes from Paris, or it comes from London, or it comes from New York. That's just the perception of the Chinese mind. So if you're going over there trying to teach Chinese hairdressers, you already are on a pedestal because you are European and you're coming from Europe. And the challenge is really how to translate that into something that's more personal for the people on the other side, because they're going to take your, you know, they're going to take your, they're going to take your hairdressing class or your hairdressing course or your hairdressing training based on how you are marketed. And you're obviously going to be marketed as, this is the hairdressers coming from Europe. They know all the latest techniques, all the latest styles, whatever. Okay. But the key to reaching the next level when you're working with your pupils or working with your students is to be able to develop that interpersonal connection, because those relationships can translate into several things. It can translate into business opportunities of collaboration when you're working with these people or you have a personal relationship. In China, we call it guanxi. When you develop this guanxi relationship with your pupils, they could become future partners or collaborators. That's one thing. The other aspect is, if you are able to develop a closer personal relationship or a guanxi relationship with all of your students, they eventually become your followers. They become your 1,000 true fans. They become your audience in China, and they can help spread your message. And it's possible for you and your coworkers who are going over to China to do this training, if you cultivate the right relationships, to actually become what we call KOLs, or key opinion leaders.
How do you call that? Can you repeat that?
It's called KOL.
Okay.
And it stands for key opinion leader.
Okay.
And that's equivalent to being an influencer. But KOLs, if you can become a KOL in China, then it's almost like you can instantly attract millions of followers and fans. And the opportunities from that audience are just really for people who just do and work in their little markets, you know, in their single countries, like, you know, Italy being a small, if you consider Belgium a single market, it's really small.
Yeah, Belgium is really small, Gene. It's really small. You don't even
If you can become a KOL or a key opinion leader in China, then the opportunities are massive. And one of the things that I have witnessed is most foreigners who go to China for things like this, you know, leading workshops, leading training, leading classes, they fail to cultivate those personal relationships to build their own following. For your friends going to China, they are already on a pedestal.
Okay.
And the question that I would challenge them with is try to translate that into a personal relationship with all of your students and all of your clients, and start to build a following. Because if you can build a following in China and become a key opinion leader, you're golden.
Yeah, that's a good Gene. Is that also maybe related to the fact that I know that in China there was a very great influence on thinking by three great philosophies, so like mm-hmm. Taoism and Confucianism and Zen or Chan Buddhism. So there really were great philosophies, I think, that shaped the way the Chinese mind works, no?
Absolutely, it does. So let me comment on that.
Yeah.
So what happens when foreigners go to China is they learn about China's traditional philosophies and teachings, going from Buddhism to Taoism to Confucianism, all of these philosophies. And they know about China's 5,000-year history and all of this stuff. And what happens is all of these cultural philosophies that you just mentioned, they are the undercurrent of the mindset of people in China.
Yes.
Now, what happens is because there's this undercurrent of being hierarchical, of being very conservative, what happens is foreigners, when they go to China, they're really confused. And they feel that China is a land of contradictions, because how can you believe in these ancient philosophies of being conservative and being respectful, but then they go to China and they see that everybody is so materialistic and individualistic and capitalistic. And it basically what happens is the foreigners get confused. They feel that China is a land of contradictions, because things that I'm learning about Chinese culture don't match up with how people actually behave. And that's really where people misunderstand the implications of this traditional culture. So let me explain that a little bit more.
Okay.
What you're going to perceive when you go to China is you're going to experience this contradiction. So in the hairdressing industry, it's about being fashionable. It's about being on the latest trends. It's about luxury. Okay. That's completely contrary to traditional Confucianism or Taoism or Buddhism. Okay. It's contradictory.
Yeah.
So the application of the traditional Chinese philosophies applies to the giving and receiving of face or mianzi.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's how Chinese people interpret respect and disrespect. It's the whole process of forming guanxi relationships, which is based on a system of reciprocity. And this reciprocity is based on a system of goodwill, where you give and you receive. So you're going to, when you go to China, you're going to experience, because you're already elevated on a pedestal coming from Europe, you're going to experience a lot of goodwill, because people want to know what you have to offer. People want to learn from you because you're coming from the Mecca of fashion, which is Europe.
Yes.
Okay. But that doesn't change the fact that your clients and your students and your partners in China care about this system of reciprocity and the giving and receiving of face. So you have to really understand that what you call Chinese philosophy in the context of forming successful business relationships. And it's just one of the complexities that most foreigners really don't understand. And one of the things that I try to help my clients and even my audience through my podcast slowly start to be able to address.
Yeah, that's a very good explanation, because I experienced it myself. So I practiced Chinese martial art for several years. So I had also my sifu was very, very keen on etiquette, on respect. So, and even then, for me, sometimes it was very difficult to interpret it in the right way. But I can imagine that it's more important to have that correlation and that respect, and to build that up. And then business is like you have cause and effect. It's an after effect of that. Is it correct if I interpret it like that?
It's especially important in business. So if you are learning martial arts from a master, there's already an established relationship that one person is the master and the other person is the apprentice.
Correct.
Or you know, that's the relationship. So there shouldn't be any misunderstandings about respect, because the apprentice is always going to be respectful of the master.
Of course.
That's a given.
Of course.
What happens is, in a business relationship where there isn't such a clearly defined hierarchy.
Yes.
I mean, even if the people you're going over there to meet, even if they're quote unquote your students and you are the master, they want to learn about your skills and your knowledge. But that doesn't automatically translate into they want to follow you, promote you, and become your business partner.
Okay.
You have to separate those two dynamics. One is student-teacher relationship, master-apprentice relationship. Other is the more equal business relationship.
Yep.
And the more equal business relationship is really where you have to pay attention to the cultural nuances of why Chinese people have different values than most Westerners.
Okay. So, Gene, that was a very understandable explanation, because I think it's a very strong point of view and a very strong advice you give here to follow. So, if you go from there further on, so is there for an inspiration or philosophy of habit that you have, or that you helped improve your life, of where you put some inspiration on, or gives you some strength, or?
Well, basically, everything in my life and my business is a culmination of what I have basically developed for myself. Okay, so what have I developed for myself? I've developed an awareness that if I want to be successful in any of my relationships, whether it's personal relationships, family relationships, or business relationships, I have to have, or I have to develop, and I have to continue to develop, the essential soft skills that matter. Yeah. And for me, those essential soft skills are, as I said at the beginning of our interview, is awareness and empathy. And you have to think about it like this. You think about these as a skill. So let's imagine that you have this skill. One is empathy, which means you know what other people value and how they feel.
Yeah.
And the other is awareness. You know exactly what other people have as an opinion of you. You know how other people perceive you. And if you have these two skills going in both directions, then the only thing you have to do is you have to adjust your attitude, mindset, and approach to influence how other people perceive you. And I apply these skills, and I continuously adjust my own attitude, mindset, and approach, not just in my business relationships, but in all of my relationships. It's consistent. So this has translated into how I live my life. And I actually call this a journey towards becoming a master of cross-cultural performance. So cross-cultural performance mastery is actually what I call the pursuit that I am on.
Yeah.
I admit that I will never be a master, but my journey to master these skills and to apply them to my interactions with other people, it's a never-ending quest for improvement. And for the students and the clients and the people that I work with, what we do is we begin a journey towards becoming masters of cross-cultural performance, which is what we're talking about today. And this applies really when foreigners or Americans do, or Europeans, when they do business in China, because the cultural dichotomies are so vast that if you don't develop these skills, you will ultimately end up experiencing a lot of disappointments.
Yeah. So maybe we can jump on that and go further on that. Is also, so what is your clear mission and the values that matter to you then the most? because I think they're going to be totally in line with what you just told.
Yeah, well, the mission of my business, so we'll break it down into two. One is the mission of my life, and one is the mission of my business. And the reason why it's easy for me to talk about this is because the mission of my life and the person I want to be and how I want to be perceived by other people, it's aligned with the mission of my business. So the mission of my business is actually to create this ecosystem of content and services that I can offer not just my friends and my family, but I can offer everyone, so they can learn how to develop more successful relationships across cultures. So that's the mission of my business, this ecosystem that I'm developing.
Yeah.
The mission of my life is also to improve the harmony and how I live my life and interact with other people. So that harmony extends not only to my business relationships, but it extends directly to my personal relationships and to my family. I mean, how I interact with my wife improves because I'm empathetic to what my wife values and what she feels. And because I have that level of empathy and I know how she perceives me when I say certain things in a way that she's unhappy with, I can avoid that. I can change my approach. I can change my attitude. I can change even the intonation of how I articulate myself. And then my wife is happier when we have a disagreement and our arguments don't escalate into fights. And so what I'm doing helps not only my business relationships, but it helps all facets of my personal relationships with everybody.
Yeah. Okay. So can you also say that your biggest goals and dreams and aspirations lie also there, of course?
Absolutely. You know, I have become the person that I am trying to help other people aspire to become. And that isn't really, I'm not saying I'm helping people become great leaders or great marketers or great business people or great strategic thinkers. I'm just helping people achieve greater harmony with all of the people that they will come in contact with through their business and their personal lives. And that's the mission that I'm on. And that's the person that I strive continuously to become.
Gene, where did that development come from? Can you say, did you have like a failure, an apparent failure in your life that got you stronger to come to this successful story you're writing now?
It's a continuous story and it's a continuous journey. And obviously, in the past, when I lacked awareness or I lacked empathy, if I look back in hindsight, that led to a lot of what I call China leadership dilemmas. So for your audience and for my audience, China leadership dilemmas are when foreigners go to a foreign culture and they experience an unexpected disappointment. And those unexpected, so people are disappointed all the time. I mean, you may not respond the way I want, you may not like my message, but many times we expect certain amount of people to not be attracted to what we have to say. What happens when we experience an unexpected disappointment is because, number one, we are myopic. Number two, we lack awareness. And number three, we don't know what we don't know. I call those, or Donald Rumsfeld calls those, unknown unknowns. And what happens is most foreigners who are myopic when they go to a country like China is they don't know what they don't know. And therefore, they experience a lot of unexpected disappointments. So for my personal story and to answer your question, I went to China 7 years ago on an assignment as an expatriate, which means a foreign company, it happened to be a German company, hired me, sent me to China, and they chose me to go to China because of my language skills and because of my experience in China and because of all of these experiences I have developed in China. But I still experienced a lot of, you can call them failures, or you can call them CLDs or China leadership dilemmas, but I experienced a lot of unexpected disappointments. And when I look back, it was because I lacked awareness. It's because I lacked empathy. It's because there were certain things that I didn't know I didn't know. And what I've set on a mission to do now is to overcome that lack of awareness and manage the unknown unknowns when you go to a foreign country, and then help other people to prepare themselves with the right attitude, mindset, and approach to be successful in a foreign country or in a foreign culture.
So that was the experience that gave you that aha moment.
It wasn't so much an aha moment as much as a culmination of a lot of things that didn't turn out the way I expected. And that's just another way to say an unexpected disappointment. And when you really go back and analyze, why did people respond the way they respond? Why did they not behave the way I expected them to? Why did the things that I say that I thought were of value to them, why did they not appreciate that? That's all due to a lack of awareness and empathy, not understanding what other people actually value and trying to impose your own judgment or set of values on other people. And I've learned to control that, manage that, and avoid that. And I'm trying to also help other people do that too.
Okay, that's nice. So if you really want to say yes, you also first must be able to say no. So what have you become better saying no to at the moment, Gene?
What have I become better saying no to? Well, for me, I don't think of it in terms of yes and no, because one of the things that people have to understand in order to be successful in China or any cross-cultural environment, the key is being able to manage the different shades of gray, which means don't think of things as black and white, yes, good or bad, right or wrong. But to answer your question, I've developed the ability to say no because I'm very consistent with who I am. I have a certain set of principles that are really quite fixed, and I genuinely care about delivering value to other people. So when I have to say no because something's against my values or against what I think is going to be better, it's not difficult for me to say no. I would just naturally say that wouldn't work for me. And I've discovered that people who don't know me actually may get offended. But over the long run, as people develop these relationships and they understand who I am, then they understand that it's not prejudice. I'm not having a double standard where I'm saying no to you, but yes to somebody else. It's very consistent with who I am. And then once people understand that, then they appreciate the fact that I said no, in the past.
Yeah. Because, okay, that's nice. So Gene, if you look back from a higher level, so what are then the most valuable lessons you learned in your journey?
Well, the lessons are pretty consistent. The lessons is, if you want to develop prosperous personal or business relationships, you have to develop an ability to be empathetic with what other people value and what other people care about. And that's, if you want to call it advice, it can be advice, but it's just a journey that I always encourage people to go on, and it's to develop the ability to really be empathetic to others.
Is that also advice that you would give? Or maybe is there something you would add? If you could give advice to young and driven entrepreneurs, hairdressing entrepreneurs, or other kinds of entrepreneurs, young people who want to go out in the world and do something, what would you then say to them?
Well, the advice, like I said, the advice is universal. So for hairdressers, I think empathy allows them to develop a better rapport with their clients as they're helping them with their with the way they look, because you have to be empathetic to what your clients care about as far as their appearance and what style they would be more comfortable in. But it also translates into business. So for example, your friend who's going over to China, if they are able to develop a cultural awareness and empathy for the Chinese students and the clients and people they're interacting with, that will be a gateway for them to become key opinion leaders in their niche in China. Yeah. And I think it applies universally to all aspects of life and business.
Okay. I personally think, Gene, that you're a great master already because you have the attitude of keep on learning constantly. So the attitude of being a student for the rest of your life. But isn't it what a master is in the end? A student for life?
That's exactly right. That's why masters become masters, because they never stop.
Okay, that's nice. So I want to thank you very kindly, Gene, to share this tremendous knowledge and information with my listeners, with myself. And I want to thank you for your time. So I hope to hear and see you soon. And I want to thank you very much for this.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I enjoyed it very much. And maybe I'll see you in London in a couple of weeks.
Hope so. Thank you, Gene.
All right. Thank you.